football talk like you've never heard before.
The pinky finger goes up the nose.
Ugh. From the tailgates.
He is a terrible tipper and a terrible human.
To the touchdowns.
He's going for the corner. He's got it.
We have everything covered.
Place at the table.
Here are your hosts, Patrick Maher and Andy Staples.
Hit squad is in the house.
Place at the table. Wow, week 7 already, Andy Staples. Week 7 in college football.
It flies by, and then by the end, you're like, it's been going on for a while. And then when it's over, oh my God, it's 9 more months.
As a dude that covers college football and food, let's be honest, and life in general.
I don't stop eating for 9 months.
I would imagine that's quite a fast. As a dude that covers, is it... like, is the middle of it fun for you, or is the off, like, where do you stand when you're in the middle of it? Because right yesterday you were in Palo Alto, then you go down to Baton Rouge, so it's constant. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, when they're playing, it's more fun. It's definitely more fun when they're playing. The off season's kind of you know, it's just not nearly as interesting. You're just trying to come up with stuff. I have a test in the off season called How much of a big deal would we be making out of this story if it happened during the season? Because there's awful lot of stories that just blow up into the biggest thing we're talking about in college football because we just want to talk about something.
Right, right. So that, I guess that would lead me, and by the way, you can find Andy and I at PATT Podcast, download on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, PATTpodcast.com. Make sure you give us a comment. We appreciate you. I wanted to start here, Andy, tonight with, so we're going into week 7. If we were just to talk about the biggest surprises thus far, like if I were to tell you the biggest surprise of the season thus far is in Norman, the Cyclones beating the Sooners, would you say yes?
Yes, definitely. I would say that is the biggest, followed by, looking back now, Oklahoma beating Ohio State.
Yeah, looking back. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that loss, it's almost like now we start playing the game where we spider it. Does that mean more about Ohio State, or does it mean more about Oklahoma? I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we'll find out with Ohio State playing Penn State here in a couple weeks. I think that will probably give us a couple answers as to where Ohio State really falls in pecking order, because I think Penn State's really good. You know, they look like the most complete team in the Big Ten, and you know, if Ohio State beats them, then that's good for Ohio State. That bodes very well. And they could get over that Oklahoma loss. I mean, look, they lost to a Virginia Tech team that I think finished that season 500 in 2014, and Ohio State ended up winning the national title.
Well, I think you just walked me into what I wanted to do with that. So let's start with the Big Ten. We're going to go biggest surprise and biggest disappointment. And when I say biggest disappointment, you can legitimately say the fact that Lovie Smith hasn't done anything with that program or whatever.
Yeah.
The fact that Chris Ash, the biggest surprise in the Big Ten, and you can't say Michigan State beating Michigan, would be what?
Oh, why can't I say that? Because that's the biggest surprise?
Yeah, I guess because it was in Ann Arbor. That's pretty...
I think that's the biggest surprise. Michigan just not having a functional offense. I mean, we talked about this on your radio show earlier this week. They've become 2014 through 2016 Florida. Great defense. Like,
yeah, great defense.
Top 5 type defense. Can't do anything on offense. And the Florida folks will tell you how that story ends, and it's not pleasant.
That's a great point about, and I love your Florida analogy, because that Michigan defense, as young as it is ridiculous.
It's awesome, and it's going to be awesome for 2-3 years. So if they do get a quarterback in the next couple of years, then they're going to be really
and
good.
And you love their D coordinator.
Don Brown, yeah, he's awesome. He's just mad scientist in terms of finding ways to pressure the quarterback, and really just is great at evaluating his players and figuring out how to best use them.
Is there a disappointing team?
I'd say Nebraska. They came in with really high hopes. Now, the more realistic people, the numbers crunchers, said you should be expecting a 6-6 season. But they expected a lot better than this.
I can tell you guys from Vegas expected 6 wins.
Right. Vegas was on it. The advanced stats guys were on it. I think there's a little disconnect with Nebraska, and it gets back to what we were talking about with the offseason. there is so much sunshine pumping that goes on with Nebraska's program in the offseason. And I think it's just because it's not because their media up there want to pump sunshine. It's because there's such a voracious appetite for all things Nebraska that they're going to write tons of stuff about them in the offseason. And there's really hard, it's hard to find negatives usually in the offseason. Usually everybody's optimistic about stuff. So you get all this avalanche of optimistic stories, and then the crushing reality of, oh, your team's not very good, hits you.
Are we surprised by Wisconsin at all?
No, they're about what we thought they'd be. They run the ball really well. They play great defense. I mean, this is what they've been.
Are we surprised Minnesota got beat at home by Maryland with a third string quarterback?
No, I'm not surprised by a ton in a coach's first year when they're trying to reinvent the program. So that sort of thing happens. And then losing to Purdue happened. I'm surprised that Jeff Brohm has made Purdue competitive so quickly.
Well, especially, I mean, that offense. That. I should say, I mean, think about what a philosophy can do offensively. They couldn't score prior to Brohm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they couldn't do anything. And I don't think it's just an offensive philosophy. I think it's a top-down belief. It's a program-wide. Now, swagger is probably not the right word for it, but it's just a mindset.
No, I understand what you mean.
That they don't go into games thinking we're going to get killed anymore.
No, that's a great... do you think PJ Fleck, given a redo with all that's happening, we'll get to that buyout life coming up on Place at the Table, but do you think PJ Fleck would have stuck one more year with some talent at Western Michigan and then pick his place?
You know, when you look at it this way, considering the potential demand for coaches and the supply of ones that are established, yeah, I think maybe another year. Although you could say the same thing for Brohm. If Brohm had stayed at Western Kentucky another year, he might have jumped into a bigger job than Purdue.
Yeah, and when I interviewed Brohm, and you know him much better than I do, it sounds like these dudes get there for 1 year, and regardless, it did sound like he's there for 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah, neither of those two guys strikes me as a one-and-done kind of guy.
No, he was selling that program hard.
I mean, somebody might make an offer they just absolutely can't refuse, but I just can't see it.
Okay, let's go to the SEC. Biggest surprise this year in the SEC. And I'm putting you on the spot, but I like it. I like it. This is, you got to use your college football noodle that you're famous for.
I would say LSU being as disappointing as it's been. Because I thought new offense with all those athletes, with a defense that should have been just as good as last year, I thought they'd be all right. But they're not all right. And maybe they'll get better because they're getting some players back and they're starting to kind of figure things out. But, you know, I'm not optimistic about their chances against Auburn this week.
All right, that's your biggest surprise, SEC. Who's the biggest disappointment?
I got to say Arkansas. You know, they just haven't been competitive at all. They were competitive against Texas A&M. They went to overtime. But not like they have been in recent years. You know, in recent years, they always seem to have a chance. And now they go into games and you're just thinking, these poor guys. And interesting story that came out today about Brett Bielema's buyout. So apparently nobody up there had actually read his contract, and they kept saying he's got a $15.4 million buyout. Well, no, there's a formula for figuring out his buyout that uses the number $15.4 million. But depending on how you read the contract, his buyout is actually $5.2 million or $9.4 million. And it sounds like the people at Arkansas are leaning toward $5.2 million, which is very manageable for them.
You know, TCU went there and beat them up as well.
28-7. I mean,
TCU beat up, and they beat up Oklahoma State at home as well. Maybe he was sleeping on TCU a little bit.
I think, well, I mean, we're getting to the big, if we go to the Big 12 and talk
about
the biggest
surprise there.
Yeah, no, that's
great. No, I love that. Okay, so biggest surprise SEC is how bad LSU's been, and maybe it's a little bit of the same, but biggest disappointment is Arkansas. Let's go Big 12, and biggest surprise, Andy.
TCU. Now, I thought maybe they'd get better because they tend to follow losing seasons under Gary Patterson with pretty good seasons. But you thought Oklahoma's going to be very good. Oklahoma State's going to be very good. K-State's going to be very good. West Virginia's going to be very good. Well, TCU's already beaten Oklahoma State and West Virginia. So if they beat Oklahoma or K-State and they play K-State this week, there's a really good chance they're sitting there in the Pac or the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, and the out of conference going to Arkansas. I mean, yeah, again, it's not the same, but
which is not going to look like a very good win at the end.
Right,
of the season.
That's a wonderful one. So TCU, was there a specific reason maybe you didn't have them with, you know, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma coming into the year?
I just didn't know offensively how good they'd be. I didn't know how Kenny Hill was going to mature. I didn't know how good their running game was going to be. I think their running game really is what is making the biggest difference, because they can sit on a lead now. You know, they can get a lead and hold it. Now, that's not what happened against West Virginia. West Virginia was kind of back and forth, but it is what happened against Oklahoma State. And they also forced some turnovers. So you've got to be able to force turnovers to win in the Big 12. I was pretty sure their defense would be better, just because of the circumstances that they dealt with last year, where a bunch of young guys had to play, and then all of a sudden they had a bunch of veterans and a bunch of seniors with experience. But as Gary Patterson always says, old players play faster. So
Big 12 team, and it can be random, but a Big 12 team that's disappointed you. Again, it
K-State?
Can be like, oh, Kansas State.
Went to Vanderbilt and got dominated. And that Vanderbilt defense has not exactly dominated anybody else. You know, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia scored a bunch on them. And then went down to Texas and lost. And, you know, maybe Texas is a lot better, but... You know,
did K-State Bama move the ball against Vandy?
A little bit, teeny tiny bit, just a skosh.
Mr. Mason's defense took a hit.
Forget Bama moved the ball on Vandy. Florida
moved
on Vandy.
That's the biggest
Florida
indictment.
Florida moved the ball on anybody.
That's the indictment, but Kansas State didn't, so there you have
it. No, and Jesse Ertz is banged up, and the backup played a bunch against Texas, and Texas couldn't figure out that he was going to run quarterback power every time for some reason, but eventually they figured it out and won that game in double overtime. But we can throw Texas in as a surprise. I didn't know that they'd be sitting here 2-0 in the Big 12. I thought they'd take a little bit longer to adjust, but you know, we don't know. They can
no,
still
you could also say big. You could say, Andy, though, big the surprise.
They lost to Maryland.
The surprise beatdown at home to open the season to Maryland is shocking.
Right, and it was shocking that they played with USC. But now the more we see USC, the less shocking that is.
Yeah, that's fair. So let's go to the Pac-12. A team, I don't think you're going to put USC. I dare you. I don't think you're going to put USC as your biggest disappointment.
No, because they can still win the league.
Right.
It's not over for them yet.
To come out of the South.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to throw them in there as the biggest disappointment yet. I guess the biggest disappointment has to be Oregon State. So disappointing, their coach lost his mind and quit and left all the money on the table.
Yeah, and we talked about it on the show, but let's delve into that just a little bit more. So Gary Anderson leaves a ton of money on the table, but you and I talked about maybe he walked away because he was looking to a clean break so he could get another job, but the text messages, which you'll fill us in on, probably preclude him from anybody hiring him because of his lack of scruples.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody hiring him after this. So John Canzano from the Oregonian published a bunch of text messages that Gary Anderson had sent over the past month. And apparently Anderson gave permission to publish the text messages, but probably shouldn't have. A lot of throwing his assistants under the bus. And look, if you're going to blame the assistants, guess whose fault that is? The guy who hired them.
Yeah.
So it's your fault. And I mean, watch him slowly coming unglued as he dealt with this team. And he occasionally would say it's on me, but then he'd try to blame other people. So I don't know. I mean, I think he thought he was being the good guy by leaving $12 million on the table. But, I mean, I don't know that really helps anybody. It certainly isn't going to help him get another job. I think he thought people would look at that and say, oh, you did the right thing. You didn't make them fire you and pay you. But
he bailed on him. He bailed on his kids.
Right. And Spurrier did it 2 years ago. But the difference was Spurrier was never going to work again.
No, and Spurrier did it because he was like, I am
because
terrible.
He knew he should have retired. Right. He knew he was doing a bad job. And he said that many times. Gary Anderson doesn't think he was doing a bad job.
He thinks his assistants obviously were.
He does. He definitely thinks his assistants were doing a bad job.
And a little, you know, you can judge it differently, but I think another athletic director might also say, like, dude, this is a dude that bailed on Wisconsin for Oregon State. He did. Mercurial, I guess, is the word.
That would be the word. And look, it's one thing if and it the narrative that they offered when he left Wisconsin made sense, that he's a West Coast guy, he's going back to where he's most comfortable, and we knew he'd clash with Barry Alvarez a little bit, didn't like their academic standards there, so he wanted to get back to something he was more comfortable with, which made sense at the time, but now, looking back on it, you're like, well, maybe he was acting like this at Wisconsin, too.
All right, that's the Pac-12. Andy, let's go to the ACC. I think I know the biggest disappointment. This is a pretty easy one. I think I know
Florida
where you're
going to
go. Yeah, Florida State. Yep.
Yeah, and I still think Florida State can turn this around and have an okay season. They're going to need to beat Louisville to do that. If they beat Louisville and the only game they lose from here on out is Clemson, I think they're going to be okay. This will be looked upon as a kind of a lost year where the quarterback got hurt at the beginning of the year, but it will end on a positive note because they'll play in an okay bowl game, probably win that bowl game. They'll probably kind of get better as the season goes on. But if they lose to Louisville, then lose to Clemson, you know, you're sitting there with how many losses at that point? You know, that's going to be tough.
Surprise. So, how about a surprise in the ACC?
I'm surprised NC State turned out good after losing South Carolina.
Watch now, your mouth.
If you look at the stats on that game, NC State did dominate that game statistically, just could not tackle Deebo Samuel on kickoffs, and sort of fed into the stereotype of every NC State team that's supposed to be good but then isn't. Well, it turns out they're probably good. Now, they still have to beat Clemson. They still have to play Notre Dame. There's a lot left for them to accomplish, but I think they've bounced back from that South Carolina loss very well, and they look like a contender in the ACC now. They may get their doors blown off by Clemson, but they didn't last year. I mean, they should have won that game in Death Valley last year.
The more I read in the preseason, the more I thought there might be something. Obviously, defensively, crazy good. But are you surprised at all with Miami?
No. This is. I thought they'd be better. I thought this might be the year that they could get Florida State. We're going to see exactly how good they are with Virginia Tech and Notre Dame coming up, but I think I would not be shocked at all to see them in the ACC championship game.
Place at the table!
All right, let's get into it. We hear the drum line. It really means something different every week. This week it means we're going to get into a little...
It's almost like we only have one sound effect.
No, we don't. Here, I'll prove it to you, smartass. Look.
It's the Power 5 Top 5.
So let's rank the conferences.
I like that. All right.
Let's go. Obviously, Big Ten's one. Who's two?
Yep. ACC.
Can I argue SEC because of how good Georgia and sleepy good Florida or Auburn is?
You can argue it, but I'd still put SEC 3 because the bottom of the SEC, especially Arkansas and Missouri, are pretty bad.
Toilet bowl. Okay, so then you're going to go Big Ten, ACC, SEC, and
Pac-12. But Pac-12 and SEC, because the thing is, the top of the Pac-12, Washington State, USC, pretty good. But 11 teams in the Pac-12 can beat anybody in the Pac-12 on a given day. It's the deepest of the leagues. I just don't know if their teams at the top are as good as like an Alabama or a Clemson or a Penn State. I just don't know if that the top of that league is as good.
Now I'm bitter. You said it about the Stagers, so.
Come after me. I'm a man.
I'm Andy. You're just going to run them all out.
Hey, by the way, so this is where we get childish and we get a little immature. So that means that's Twitter.
Have I fought with anybody this week?
To be honest with you, you're always low-key fighting or poking at somebody.
I do like to poke at people. That's
if
true.
Somebody's poked at you, something on Twitter that stands out this week, something inane, something ridiculous, the life of SpongeBob, I'm Andy. Anything stand out this week?
That's what I'm trying
man.
To think of.
I'm
Andy. I don't remember anybody really.
I think you know what?
I've been busy, so I haven't really had a chance to just sit there on Twitter.
I'm going
to
say this. I'm going to say things must be going well with Wifey because you've been pretty level-headed.
Well, things are always going well with Wifey. She's the stabilizing force. We were going through our covers that are better than the original, and one guy's like, because I had thrown out two that I really liked, the Sturgill Simpson cover of
Promise.
The Promise by When in Rome and Johnny Cash's version of Hurt. And some guy goes, I think the Johnny Cash version of Hurt is a cover of a Nine Inch Nails song. I'm like, yes, because we're talking about covers that we like better than the original.
Yeah, no, that works.
So I hate it when the guy explains what you're doing to you.
No, it's beyond. See, that's why we play Twitter, Andy. That is social media for you right there. All right, that's enough. Let's go. Week 7. How would you, just looking macro at the schedule, exciting week? Again, like you've mentioned, even if the games don't pop, sometimes that's when it's the best.
Well, that's what I was looking at the schedule, and there's some intriguing games at every part of the schedule. Like last week, there was nothing, it looked like there'd be nothing good at noon, and then Iowa State Oklahoma happened. So here's what looks kind of interesting. TCU at K-State. Just because every week feels like a is TCU for real kind of week. Texas Tech at West Virginia also at noon. I think that could be a fun game. That could be a real shootout.
Real quick on TCU Kansas State. Ertz isn't going to play, but the kid behind him can run a lot, right?
Right. Like
his name?
Deltron.
Okay.
He can run really well, but the problem is he doesn't. They don't seem to want to throw it all with him. So if you're one-dimensional against TCU, you got a problem. Because Patterson's not going to let you do that. You're not going to be able to just do one thing and beat them. So they got to throw the ball. Now, here's the one at noon that is super intriguing. May not be interesting at all, depending on how things go, but so many storylines. South Carolina at Tennessee.
Oh, dude, there's...
If South Carolina wins that game, I mean, doesn't that... Is that it? Is it the writing on the wall?
Oh, you didn't think the beat down by Georgia, or you didn't? I mean, come on, the listless performance the week before. Yeah. It's not like South Carolina is a terrible football team, so I don't know what would change if
it's not. But so they're going to start Jarrett Garantano at quarterback. Tennessee is. We'll see if that makes a difference. I don't know if it will or not. I think it may show that there was a reason Quentin Dormady was starting. We've had that a lot this year. Everybody thinks because of what happened with Sam Ellinger at Texas and Jake Fromm at Georgia that, oh, if the backup gets in, everything will suddenly be better. But ask a Michigan fan how that works. Sometimes you just find out there's a reason they were the backup.
We jumped ahead a little bit. Kind of an interesting matchup tomorrow night on Friday. Washington State at California.
Yeah, because Justin Wilcox does a good job on defense. They've gotten quite a bit better, although I think the way Washington State's playing right now, Cal's going to have a real hard time scoring on them.
I mean, remember, USC had to come back late in the fourth at Cal before they went to Wazoo.
Yeah. Now, and there's another game tomorrow night with Clemson and
Barbers.
And Syracuse. Barbers?
Dino Barbers. That's my guy.
Dino Babers?
Yeah, I know. Remember I said Barbers before, and you're like, Babers.
Well, so they got a 290-pound running back at Syracuse, which is awesome. He's a freshman defensive tackle, and they're like, you know what? We're going to make you a running back.
They have a quarterback, too. They score. I mean,
Eric Dungy's really good. This could be fun, except for the problem of Clemson is the one kind of team that is the worst matchup for that offense. So if your four can beat their five offensive linemen and you can cover one-on-one on the outside, that offense can't do anything.
And plus, it's everything college football is about, that dome. Gross.
The dome named after an air conditioning company that is not air conditioned.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so Purdue at Wisconsin, does that, if you're a Badger fan, does that concern you?
I don't think so. I don't think they should be concerned. They're a remarkably consistent team. I think Purdue, now it might be like Purdue and Michigan where Purdue gives them a game for a half and then just can't hang on because Wisconsin has better players and they're very well coached.
Let's do this as we...
Let's throw some cash around this week. This is Patrick's Pick Play.
It's not Patrick's Pick Play. I don't give out picks because I don't pretend to know what the hell I'm talking about. I do gamble a lot. And so this is where Andy and I have fun with some of these spreads. So the one I'll ask you about is... I mean, is this the game you're most looking forward to, that being Auburn at LSU?
I don't know that I'm looking forward to it, especially not from a line perspective because I just... From what I've seen at LSU, I don't have a lot of faith in them against Auburn.
Auburn's laying 7 at Death Valley. I mean, that's crazy.
I think Auburn can cover that.
Auburn's laying 7 at LSU.
LSU's going to have guys back on defense. They should be better defensively than they were last week. But when Auburn gets clicking on offense and gets that tempo going, I think they can cover 7.
There's a game I wanted. The reason I brought in the pick plays is because I wanted to ask you specifically about a game in Los Angeles. And I need you to tell me, as a college football expert, senior writer at SI.com, why wouldn't I take the 12.5, 13 points with Utah at USC? Why wouldn't I?
Because Utah's offense is not very good. Utah's defense is good. But if USC gets a couple turnovers, they can blow that out like they did 2 years ago. That was a complete blowout 2 years ago of a pretty good Utah team that just kind of got behind the sticks and started pushing and turned the ball over.
All right, you convinced me. So then I have another question. Missouri's going to Athens.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and like I just looked at I didn't even look at the number, but I'm like, the number couldn't be high enough, although it's all relative. So I'm laying 30 with the Bulldogs.
I laid it open at 4 touchdowns and they bet it up to
30. So
wow.
That could have been your answer for the SEC. It's not even a disappointment or a surprise. It's just like the biggest disaster right now, Missouri.
Well, and the other thing is, you should not have that big of a line in a conference game.
That's right.
That's a bad sign for your conference, not just for Missouri. You don't want teams to be that bad at the bottom. So
yeah, it's okay.
I'm not sure there's a number high. But and remember, so Arkansas opened as a 30-point dog to Bama, and it got bet up to 31.5.
Yeah. No, you're right.
At least Nebraska opened as a 25-point dog to Ohio State.
Got bet down
to 24.5.
Yeah. No, you're right. That game at Nebraska and Lincoln, Ohio State,
Can I throw what does Vegas know that we don't out there?
Sure.
Oklahoma opened as a 7.5-point favorite over Texas, and then it was bet up to 8.5 points. What does Vegas know that we don't?
Oklahoma opened as a 7-point favorite at Texas, and it got bet up to 8.5.
Yeah. Now, they're not at Texas. It's in Dallas.
In Dallas, neutral, yeah. Right. Red River.
This doesn't make any sense. This series is 2-2 the last 4 years, despite Oklahoma being the vastly superior program. Like, nothing about this series the last few years suggests that Oklahoma will blow the doors off Texas, because they have not done that yet, even though they've been better. And now they might not be better.
And I'll tell you why I don't think it's public steam, meaning public money, is because public is what have you done for me lately, recency effect. So generally, Oklahoma getting beat by Iowa State would then have the public going the other way. That being Texas feels like a sharp move where maybe they felt like that number was undervalued. I mean, that's the only thing I can come up with.
I would take Texas.
I would take Texas,
I would take Texas just based on what's happened the last 5 years, or the last 4 years, because I believe Texas would have covered that every year the last 4 years.
You know, that game,
Oklahoma beat them by 5 when they beat them.
We just thought for some reason that Baylor game was an aberration. Maybe there was signs there coming out of it.
And it was interesting because I think I told you this. You know, I was there, and Mike Stoops, the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma, was shook after that game. Like, you could tell he was in the mindset of that wasn't supposed to happen. And sure enough, they couldn't tackle a bubble screen against Iowa State. So Texas can do all that same stuff. And so the last time Oklahoma would have covered that spread was 2012 when they beat them 63-21. The last 4 years, Texas has won 2 of them, and the 2 that Oklahoma won were by 5 points. And both years that Oklahoma won by 5, Texas or Oklahoma was the much, much better program.
Wait, a Stoops brother look shook? They always seem dialed in and completely chill to me. They've got that Brian Kelly yoga vibe going. I mean, dude.
Bob was always pretty calm.
But his two brothers. I mean.
Right. You're talking about Mark and Mike, yeah.
Well, Mike at Arizona was turned. Like, I don't know if there was uppers
Mike
going
is
on.
Mike is definitely the most hyper of the group. Mark gets mad, like, when his defense doesn't put an 11th man on the field.
He gets pissed.
Twice.
Yeah, but, he gets pissed.
But not like Mike. Mike is the one who gets really active.
Mike had a Muschamp vibe to him as a head coach.
It's very similar. Very similar.
Mike had a Muschamp vibe. I agree with you. And by the way, I think that's Vegas money. There's no way that all of a sudden the public is getting all over Oklahoma after what happened at home against Iowa State. So that number moving from 7, 7.5 up to 8.5, it feels like something, as you mentioned, what does Vegas know?
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense. So either they know something, they got some inside info, or they're just wrong and they're about to lose some money.
All right, looking at the rest of the schedule, are there any late games that stand out? We mentioned Utah, USC.
Oregon, Stanford. Does Bryce Love run for 400 yards?
Do you want to talk about this? Now, Andy was up in the smoke was almost starting to come all the way down, right, from the fires.
On Wednesday you could smell and see all the smoke from the fire. So pretty nasty stuff up there. Palo Alto's okay. It's all of it's kind of above San Francisco is where it's going on.
But pretty so cool. Went
you,
up
that
there.
That tells you how far it's floating.
Yeah, that's just tragic. And our thoughts with everybody dealing with that's a tragedy. You went up there and pretty cool kid, right? Bryce Love.
Yeah, very cool. Does not like talking about himself. You can tell that. But everybody else was very happy to talk about him because he's just an interesting guy. And I mean, he's averaging 10.5 yards a carry.
That's insane.
There's a chance he might break Barry Sanders' single season rushing record.
That's insane as well.
That everyone thought would never fall. So I'm curious to see what he does because Oregon has been fairly good against the run this season. But I kind of think that's a function of the teams they played rather than them just being a good run defense.
He doesn't want to talk about himself, but he does want to talk about like forensics and science, right?
Yeah, no, not forensics. It's stem cell research. So he ultimately would like to be some sort of pediatric doctor. So right now he's working in a stem cell lab where they're doing some research into a certain type of stem cell that helps regenerate tissue without scarring.
Well, he's going to be like a Buffalo Bill before he does that because he's going to be a pro.
That he will. So, but Oregon is only allowing 2.73 yards a carry on the ground this year. So we'll see if he can break that out because he's broken a long touchdown run in every game so far.
Can I just stand up for my guy Barry? Doesn't college football add the bowl game stats now?
Yes.
Or there's something different about how stats
yes.
were?
Yeah, no. Barry's real record. I mean, no one's ever going to touch what Barry did in 11 games.
That's right. And on special teams, he was nuts. Yeah, he was the best.
Nobody's touching that in 11 games.
Okay, and you flew from Stanford to where?
I'm in Baton Rouge right now.
He's in Baton Rouge. How come when I asked you earlier, is this the game you're most excited about? You're like, I guess not watching. You're going to be in person watching it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's the game I'm most excited about this weekend. I have a project that I'm working on here that is a little bit longer term.
Care to divulge? I know. Ed Ogeron.
No. I'll talk about it a little bit later. As we get a little closer to November.
Ooh,
so.
Covert journalism.
No, if it were covert or investigative, I wouldn't say anything about it. I would not even mention I was here.
Not even for the health of the podcast? You wouldn't just drop a gem?
Nah. I'd just be like, I'm somewhere. I'm in a random hotel room.
All right. That's pretty much, unless there's a game standing out to you, Michigan State at Minnesota, Washington at Arizona State. Does Arizona State all of a sudden, because of the Oregon win, start to scare him a little bit?
David Shaw said that Arizona State was pretty darn good. Like that was, he seemed a little surprised by that, but he said that when they played them, they were a lot better than they thought they'd be. So, there's a lot of intriguing games that might not be great games. Texas A&M at Florida, another example. You know, if Kevin Sumlin wins that game, look at the rest of the schedule. He's going to make them make a very difficult choice if he can win this game.
Place at the table!
All right, you just did a wonderful piece on a gentleman that has an undefeated team in the Pac-12, Mr. Leach.
Yes.
He, earlier this week, had some thoughts.
I think 64 teams. but I think the minimum is 16. Oh, geez. Number 16 beat number 4. Well, screw number 4. Number 4 is out, you see, because number 16 got him. And then the other thing that I think college foolishly does is they just give the NFL December. I mean, there's no sense in that. Could even sort the schedule in such a way. Half of America has an off week 1 week. The other half has an off week the next week, and you never have to play somebody after that.
All right, I got 4 clips, so I'm going to just ask you to respond individually.
Right. And now he has been pushing this plan since like 1999.
He gets obsessed with things, and then sometimes he'd use his opportunities and like inadvertently he'll just start going into it, like sovereign immunity. If you ask him about his offensive line, he might tell you about sovereign immunity.
He probably will tell you about sovereign immunity.
Respond to this.
How about high school from a major state? You know, they win a certain number of games. They have a qualification. Okay, now, boom, they're in the playoffs. But they don't have just 2 or 4 teams or something. Hell no, because they want everybody to have fun and enjoy this playoff system. Okay, so then they play each other and wait and see if this team's going to beat that team or going to beat the other team. There's occasionally a debate. If only this team hadn't lost to that team, then this team could have won the whole thing, and that's perhaps true. But the thing that is indisputable is that at the end of the gauntlet, there's no debate whatsoever who's state champion.
Yep, that's true. And he's right. I mean, there are states with 32-team high school playoffs, but they also only play 10 regular season games.
And this.
Then you can go to Division III. Let's see, how do they do it? Oh, they do it the exact same way. Okay, now the suspense is really starting to get thick. Because, you know, Division II might do it differently. No, in fact, they don't. Okay, in 1AA. How do they do it in 1AA? 1AA. How do they do it in 1AA? You know what? They have a playoff for it, Matt, and they play it, and they figure it out.
Thoughts?
32-team playoff. It's doable. They do it in Division III.
All right, one more.
What about above us, the NFL? Because that's the best, and they're the top. How do they figure
out? He's in a mood, man.
They, in fact, organize a playoff system. And how many teams are in there? A hell of a lot more than 4. They have one battle after the next. And at the end, guess what? They sort out a champion. And the biggest sporting event every year in the history of the world is the Super Bowl.
He even for him, he was on one during that.
Absolutely.
Even for him.
He's practiced this over the years, though. I think he's finally, it has reached its peak. I don't know that he can do it better than that.
And you know what? He's kind of feeling himself. He's got a platform. He's got an undefeated team.
He's got an undefeated team, that's right.
He's got an undefeated team.
Now, Friday night on the road, you know how I feel about road favorites on a weeknight.
So I'll take the points.
Take the points. I still think Washington State wins the game, though.
Like when I get a home dog. Is Washington State... Should we consider that game at Washington to be, I mean, it's going to be obviously prestigious and high profile, but are they going to genuinely compete with Washington?
This is one of those styles make fight steals. I don't think Washington State's style matches up well with Washington's style.
Why?
Because Washington can rush with 4 and they have athletes in the secondary that can cover all of Washington State's receivers. That really limits what Washington State can do because you can drop 7 against them, and that makes it harder for those receivers. Because in the air raid offense, the receivers and the quarterback basically have kind of an unspoken communication during the play where the receiver's job, he has a route that he's supposed to run, but he can change it if he sees an open spot on the field. If he finds an open spot on the defense, he'll just kind of sit in it and wait for the quarterback to see him and throw it to him. But when there's 7 guys in pass coverage, there aren't that many open spots.
Why is Washington's – why did the secondary – why does it look better this year with – I feel like they weren't supposed to be – that was supposed to be the weak link.
So 3/4 of that secondary last year were guys that they had signed within 2 months of getting the job at Washington. They've had 3 years now to recruit this group. They're not messing around. Jimmy Lake's a really good secondary coach.
Also, a coach that, again, not to belabor, but everybody's obsessed with, which leads me to, would he leave?
For the right job. I mean, that's the thing. All those guys, Pete Kwiatkowski, Jonathan Smith, the offensive coordinator,
I'm talking about Peterson, by the way, not Leach.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about Jimmy Lake, the secondary guy. No, Peterson is not going anywhere. He's good.
Like, for example, SEC may not intrigue him because he's more of a West Coast guy and he recruits out here, right?
Well, he doesn't want that fishbowl of the SEC. Washington's perfect for him because you can recruit the best players there, but nobody bothers you because all anybody cares about is the Seahawks.
I think it's just a bit of a miss. I think Washington's place in college football kind of got lost for 10 years.
It did. This was a great program.
Great program.
James was there.
Michigan, Washington, my goodness. It was awesome back in the day.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice to see them good again because I think that – and also, I like the way they play. I like the fact that the rest of the Pac-12 has had to adapt to the way they play instead of everybody – because everybody tried to copy Oregon for a while, and so you saw that type of offense, that type of personnel proliferate. I like – that somebody's getting back just pounding at people. Now, Stanford's been pounding at people, but they were kind of the outlier. I think people will suddenly start trying to copy what Washington does. Although I don't know that you can do it because you have to coach as well and evaluate as well as Chris Peterson and his staff, and most people can't do that.
Stanford out here just lying in the weeds in the Pac-12 right now.
Yes, the worst thing that could happen to the rest of the Pac-12 was Stanford losing to San Diego State.
I agree.
Everybody just wrote them off. But guess what? They are good. They can beat just about anybody. And in November, they could really mess some stuff up. Now, their only Pac-12 loss is at USC. So if they blitz through the North, they're going to win the North. And then all of a sudden, that's not exactly what the Pac-12 wants, because you don't want a potential two-loss champion that lost to a Group of Five team.
Did you talk to Shaw when you were there?
I did.
Okay, can I ask you a question about him?
Mm-hmm.
So he is asked, excuse me, we never talk about Shaw when it comes to a college opening. It is
right.
A natural extension just to always assume David Shaw is going to go to the NFL.
Right.
What I'm most intrigued about, and this may be a little kind of new agey or hippie, but his demeanor is his sideline demeanor is tremendous, and it almost appears that the dude is completely unflappable.
He's very zen. He very comfortable in his own skin. Seems to have the answer whenever you ask whatever the question is, whether it's me asking a question in an interview or a question coming up during a game, like, what do we do in this situation? He seems to have an answer and seems to have thought it through before it even got asked. So, yeah, he just, that's who he is. He's a zen guy. Now, I don't know that he ever leaves. I would assume it's for an NFL job if he does, but he really seems to love it there. And they got something pretty cool going. They are winning, and they are operating a program that lets its players really take advantage of all that Stanford has to offer. Like a lot of programs say, oh, you know, we have a great school, this major is great, but then the player gets there and they're like, well, you know, it doesn't fit your practice schedule, so we're going to have you major in this instead.
And didn't he get like Bryce Love to cross the country to yeah. play there? So it's not
they do really well in the whole country. I mean, yeah, Bryce Love's in North Carolina. Their players are from all over. Like their offensive line, they got a guy from Georgia, they got a guy from Texas, they got a guy from Hawaii.
Always intriguing to me to watch him, though, because, for example, if Stanford's playing Arizona State, it's a tale of two sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Or even Rich, you know, Rich Rod's still turn up, man. He screams so hard at it, he freaks.
The baseball people would say he has the red ass.
Oh, he's got a major red ass.
Yeah.
He grinds too much over small things. Like, I don't get that about Deshaw. It's just like, dude, I'm chilling.
No, he sees the big picture pretty well. Now, he'll get mad about stuff. There'll be stuff that bothers. You can see in games sometimes he gets mad and there's stuff that bothers him. But, you know, he, for the most part, he, as Kevin Elko, the guy who advises Nick Saban, always suggests, keep the main thing the main thing.
But again, you don't think as far as enrollment and requirements, he might go somewhere else just to see how big this thing can get?
No, he likes it there. I think he feels like they're doing something special. Because there aren't many places where you can do, like, so their position coaches have multiple position meetings each day so their players can go to class. Like, some players have a class when normally they'd have position meetings from like 2 to 3. So like the offensive line coach does like 3 meetings a day so that his players can go to class.
Josh Rosen should have went there then so he'd stop bitching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if Josh Rosen went there and they had Bryce Love and Josh Rosen in that defense.
Goodness.
Oh, my dear Lord. That would be incredible.
Well, also, you would have a better coach because as UCLA went to Stanford, that was a tale of two sidelines and a tale of two teams towards the end of that game as well. I think that's fair to say. Okay, so where are you going to eat? And we'll talk to you next time on what's good with Staples.
I think I just walk around tailgates and ask them to feed me whatever they're making. These are the best tailgate cooks in America.
Are we, next time we get to that buyout life, is the bus still emptying? I guess we'll find out after week 7.
Oh, the bus may have its first passenger.
Because
remember, Gary Anderson decided to walk. He didn't want to get on the bus.
No, he's driving it. He's just riding around picking up coaches now.
He gets no buyout, so he's not on the bus.
Oh, that's right. He's not on the buyout bus.
He's walking. So we may see a passenger this week. We'll see.
Due to the Gamecocks?
Your alma mater could be the one. Somebody could get Muschamp.
Hail to thee. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think we're blown away if we look at the schedule, but week 3, week 2, yeah.
Whenever you look at it and say, I don't know about this one, that's when things get really crazy.
All right, enjoy your time in Baton Rouge. You can find us here, Place at the Table. Subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, PATTpodcast.com. We appreciate you. At PATTpodcast on Twitter. Of course, coming up on... what? We'll drop one on Sunday, but Staples will always have our show embedded in his SI column. You can find us on demand on the SiriusXM app, which we appreciate. Andy_Staples, and he gets the last word because it doesn't make a ton of sense. He is younger than me.
That's right.
He is a couple months younger than me.
3 months.
Hey, props to you, because don't be emotional if you're going to listen to the Sturgill Simpson. You can find it on Andy's Twitter page. But don't be sensitive, because the promise... you might get a creeper.
It'll get you in the feels.
It'll get you in feels all over.
It will get you in the feels. All right, everybody, if you are tailgating in Baton Rouge before the Auburn game and you see a fat guy coming at you with a microphone, feed him.
Hey, you know what I forgot to tell you? So I like your bifocal look, and you wear the bifocals for, I don't know if
they're
it's
not the, bifocals. I'm not that old yet, dude.
If it's to look erudite or whatever.
I'm just straight nearsighted.
Dude. I don't know if it's a Wendy's commercial, but somebody tweeted you the picture, and my brain freaked the other day. There's a dad in a Wendy's commercial that looks like a chubbier version of you, and it's uncanny.
I get fat Ray Liotta a lot, now I just get Ray Liotta.
Yeah, now you're just more like Ray, but I'm not saying, I'd say you're more handsome than the guy, just to be respectful, but it does resemble you. That's all I'm saying. Look for Staples in a Wendy appearance.
Maybe it's me. Well, I need to get in some commercials. I noticed this the other day. I was on a website. They had the big and tall. And now they say at the bottom, it says the model is this tall and wearing this size. I'm like, I need to be a fat guy model.
Yeah, I was on a website.
I got the bod for it.
I was on a website that was big and tall. It was a little different website. Andy, thank you.
That was Dustin on that website.
Yeah, no. Well, he's literally over in the other room on it right now. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll come back with another Place at the Table podcast coming into Sunday and the Monday. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
All right. It's Place at the Table.